This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
You know, the natural thing with, you have a website, you needed to have web hosting to go with
it. Right. Yeah, where the hell you put it. In those days, you didn't like call up GoDaddy.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing. Like, you know, this was before web hosting was an easy thing. I mean, there was no cPanel or anything like that back then. And for anyone that doesn't know, you know, web hosting is just kind of like the server that the website is stored on.
Yeah.
And that's connected to the internet, you know, kind of on the other side of where you are. So basically I fell in love with that because I realized that, you know, wow, this money comes in every month. You know, yeah. And sometimes like once I set
recurring
these people
income.
Up,
yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
if they don't use you, they're off the highway, right?
Yeah. And that was kind of one of the first tastes of like getting away from trading time for dollars because right. I could set someone up and, you know, unless they have a problem, you know, I may not even talk to them, you know, again, like, but they're going to pay every month.
Right.
So I was still doing, you know, the websites, but then had the recurring income of the web hosting.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview. PodMax Global is a one-day podcasting event hosted by On Air Brands. And I've had the fortunate opportunity to participate as a host of a podcast on two occasions. This was the first one in August of 2020. I interviewed three different entrepreneurs, and this is the first of those three interviews with Timothy Dick, who owns a company called Profit Layer. I think you'll find our discussion very, very interesting. Yep, we are recording. Okay, so welcome to my podcast, The Accidental Entrepreneur. I see we connected on LinkedIn, right? And Profit Layer is your business or your...
There is my primary business. I kind of, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, kind of like most of us have my hands in a little bit of everything, but
Sure. Yeah,
Profit Layer is really my focus right now.
Okay. So my podcast, I don't know if you looked it up, but it's a, you know, long format interview style. So perfect for this type of an event, but maybe we want to go back a little bit because I don't know what your background is, where you're from,
sure.
And how you got into, you know, what made you become an entrepreneur, and then maybe we can share some ideas that'll help the listeners get a hold of their businesses.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Okay, let's go back. What, were you born in a log cabin near Lincoln or something like that?
Kind of, you know. So I'm in Southern California now, just for contrast. But basically, I was born and raised in rural West Virginia. My dad was actually a coal miner. My, you know, family was not really entrepreneurial at all. And obviously, being in rural West Virginia, you know, the opportunities there are limited. You know, it's it's a nice place, but small. Very small towns.
We have a very good friend in Huntington. Is that kind of near where you were?
Yeah.
I mean, West Virginia is not that big to begin with, but
Huntington would actually be considered like the city part.
Right. That's not even rural, you know? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking like rural, like in town, you know, there's like maybe like a dollar store, one bank, one post office,
and that's it.
A gas station.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to drive about an hour to get to
Walmart. I'm outside of New York City, so I have no understanding of any of that stuff. But
yeah. And so, you know, very small town, you know, really, I always felt something different, you know, growing up from a very young age, you know, and I actually even, I guess, you know, told my family, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to move to, you know, California, New York or somewhere,
right.
You know, they were being realistic, thinking,
no, sure,
oh, you're probably going to be a coal miner or work in a sawmill or, you know, those were kind of like the.
And that's typical, Tim. There. I mean, if you grow up and your dad's a plumber, there's a good chance, especially in the olden days, right, before the world was as connected as it is, that you would be a plumber, right? So what do you think was in you? You're in this small town, you know, the world wasn't connected like it is today. Where'd that come from?
You know, I don't really know. I know that I was always very, you know, I'm an introvert, you know, and I don't think that back then I really knew what that really meant. I just thought that I was shy.
Yeah.
You know, so as an introvert, you know, I process a lot of things. And I think that I just saw, you know, back in the earliest
more
stages,
cerebral, right, TV reading and, things, seeing things. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like I remember in the summer, you know, I used to go – as like a kid, you know, we'd go to the library and I would go to like the business and self-help section. And I'm like, everybody's like, why do you read that stuff?
Right.
You know, but I always just kind of felt that. And then once I got on the internet, you know, that really opened my eyes to a lot of possibilities. And I just was really, self-taught. And I think then it was really at that point, it was kind of a, I'm going to prove that, you know, I can do something else and that I'm, you know, going to make things happen. And so I started first business in middle school.
Okay.
Yeah. Doing computer repair.
Okay. Computer repair.
Yep. Right. And it was all self-taught.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know everything, but, you know, I just looked at it as something where, you know, if I can't fix your problem or figure it out, then I won't charge you for it. So,
right. Now this was back when?
So I'm 34 now. So this would have been, you know, late 90s.
Okay.
Early 2000s.
I'm just getting out of law school at that point. So, yeah. So we had,
yeah.
I guess there were still PCs in those days, right? You can crack them open and do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned how to build my own. And, you know, that was a.
But there was no YouTube. You couldn't, like, watch a video how to do it. You got to.
There was no social media. Yeah. Right. The most common, you know, format then, there were message boards.
Right.
You know, and so.
I remember. Yeah.
You know, message boards were a big thing. So started, you know, that business and I just kind of learned as I went and, you know, I was very curious and just, so if I could needed to know how to do something, you know, I would research it and so learn. So I kind of taught myself a lot about marketing then, you know, put little display ads in the newspaper, flyers up, all that.
Yeah, that was like old school marketing. You couldn't just post something online nowadays. It's different.
Then kind of pivoted into web design because one of the things that I've discovered on the internet back then was that you could actually do business with people in other places.
Right.
So I wasn't limited just to you know, my little area.
And that's a natural pivot in those days, right? Nobody was really building webs and nobody knew what the hell to do with them. So
yeah. And if you, you know, websites back then, you know, this was in the very, you know, kind of, I guess it was kind of towards the end of the .com bubble in a way, but it was kind of where websites were still not not easy.
Yeah, it was Netscape, right? Netscape and whatever Microsoft had.
Like Google wasn't even a thing.
Right, didn't exist. It was Yahoo. You know,
there were others.
Yeah.
AltaVista.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah, those search engines that never made it. That's true.
Yeah, and so, you know, I got into to that and, you know, I found it really easy to, you know, create websites and, you know, I could easily charge thousands of dollars for it and people would pay it because if websites were, you know, not as, there weren't like all these builder tools and things back
then. Yeah, you could do it now yourself. Like there was an Instacart and Shopify and all this stuff. You just set it up and you have a store.
Yeah.
You had to program.
So I started doing that and, you know, especially, you know, basically after school and, you know, in the summers that really, I just focused on that, you know,
so you're all self-taught HTML, you taught it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I really focused on learning, you know, all that. And so I didn't do a lot of the traditional, I kind of skipped, you know, part of the high school childhood kind of stuff, but you know, it kind of worked out. So, you know, because from websites, so here I was basically by the summer of between middle school and high school, you know, I was at six figures.
Right. Really?
And
nice.
I haven't made less than six figures since. So it was really kind of a crazy situation. I got a lot of, you know, like media attention and, you know, had a lot of interesting things being both so young and making, you know, six figures. And most of the people that I was doing business with had no idea.
Right.
But then the second one, you know, that really helped a lot was just the fact that it was in a small town. So people in the town, you know, that was very uncommon. So it was just like this local celebrity kind of status.
Right. Cause you're in a small town. It's not like you're in New York City. So you get some attention.
So then from there, you know,
so you did that all through high school?
Pretty much, but I made a big shift in, the beginning of high school where, you know, the natural thing with you have a website, you needed to have web hosting to go with
right. it. Yeah. Where the hell you put it in those days, you didn't like call up, GoDaddy.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing, like, you know, this was before web hosting was, an easy thing. I mean, there was no cPanel or anything like that back then. And for anyone that doesn't know, you know, web hosting is just kind of like the server that the website is stored on,
yeah,
and that's connected to the internet, you know, kind of on the other side of where you are. So, basically I fell in love with that because I realized that, you know, wow, this money comes in every month, you know, and sometimes like once I set
recurring
these people
income.
Up,
yeah,
you know,
and
I mean,
if they don't use you, they're off the highway, right?
Yeah. And that was kind of one of the first tastes of like getting away from trading time for dollars because I could set someone up and, you know, unless they have a problem, you know, I may not even talk to them, you know, again, like, but they're going to pay every month.
Right.
So I was still doing, you know, the websites, but then, had the recurring income of the web hosting.
Is that the HostGator I saw on your profile?
So I started out with my own smaller hosting company.
Okay.
And then eventually that led to basically joining a larger, after I graduated high school, joining a larger web hosting company. And
so you like kind of merged your business in with them? Is that?
Yeah, kind of just like.
I remember HostGator. They were pretty big. Yeah.
It took, you know, took a position. And this was actually a company in upstate New York, but it turned out to be not really a good fit. I just didn't like the founder and he didn't really like me. And once we started working together, but I did move to New York from West Virginia, you know, to upstate New York.
All right.
We're in Albany.
Okay.
And then, yeah, my friend had started HostGator from his dorm room.
Got it.
We knew each other through an industry message board.
Okay.
Web hosting talk.
Did he go to University of Florida? Is that why it's HostGator?
No, he went to Florida Atlanta, FAU, but
okay,
only
so it was in
for
Florida. That's where the Gator comes from.
Yeah, but okay. he only I don't even think he lasted a semester, because he ran into the same situation I did, because I looked at colleges and was kind of debating. I came very, very close, you know, to going, and then I just thought, I'm making too much money.
Yeah, a lot of people in the tech world did that. Yeah, exactly.
I just said, you know, for me, it was very hard to, because I was, especially, I was looking at, you know, a lot of the schools, I would see, you know, some of the liberal arts stuff and all that, and I'm just like, I don't want to have to.
Right, you wanted to do what you're doing.
So
right,
I just, exactly. You know, I was interested in the business stuff, but
yeah.
So I joined him. Went down, like he just said, hey, you want to come down, help me grow HostGator? It seems like it's kind of taken off. I know you have a lot of experience, you know, so come down. So I went down. I was the first COO of HostGator.
Okay. I know HostGator got big, right?
And we HostGator. Had no idea. You know, I mean, yeah. I remember back then, you know, we literally, when I joined, you know, I think we had like 9 people or so, but it was growing fast. And we ended up, I moved down to Florida to Boca, where he was. It's just where he originally grew up.
Yeah, my wife's from that area. My brother-in-law lives down there.
And we found really fast that it was hard to hire for tech type
down positions. In that part of the country?
Yeah.
Especially and then, the cost it wasn't of living a mature was market like high. It is now. Yeah, sure, yeah. Right.
So we, within just like about 6 months of me moving there from New York, we moved everything to Houston. Picked a city that, you know, we thought was good for.
Was growing, but lower cost of living.
Cost of living, right. Taxes, all that. And then that first year in Houston, we hired.
Ton of people, right? Yeah.
You know, because it was all, you know, it was all organic growth. You know, there was no, you know, outside funding, anything like that.
Sure.
You
well, timing's we everything, like, right? Nowadays, it'd be impossible to do. There's so much competition. But then it was a feeding frenzy, right?
Yeah, it was. You know, a lot of it, there was a lot of timing. And, you know, and then also there was just, we were just very focused on providing a really high quality customer experience and just reinvesting everything back into the company and growing it. You know, we had a pretty wild ride there. I mean, it was all good, but
yeah,
you know, I was at the time, I guess, like 2021, and the founder of HostGator was 3 years older than me, so he would have been like 23.
Right.
So we just kind of had to figure things out as we went, but you know, we got through that and. Right. HostGator's doing well. A few years in, you know, he basically asked me to start another company because he wanted some diversification. Because HostGator was
safety type of thing.
Yeah, HostGator is doing extremely well, but you know, he was like, "What if we could get hacked overnight?" Or you know, just all these crazy worst case thinking kind of things. And so basically, we made a deal where you know he offered to, you know, if I would go start another company.
Right.
He would basically provide an unlimited amount of funding.
He'll fund the thing, right.
He just wants a minority stake.
Now, did you were you an owner in HostGator too?
Or no.
Just an employee?
No.
Okay.
No, I was not an owner in HostGator. I mean, there were, whenever the company was sold, you know, there were some
bonuses and things like that.
Things that were, you know, a lot of people were very well taken care of.
Right. Yeah. Who did HostGator get sold to?
A company called Endurance International.
Okay.
And they are actually they own Bluehost, iPowerWeb.
So they're still in
basically
the
top 10 sites.
Right. They own
their whole goal was to go out and acquire as many players as they could.
Right.
Their business model is interesting because they basically still operate all the brands that they've acquired independently. Uh-huh. And they don't make it well known that they've acquired them. But behind the scenes, everything's the same. You know, you're the same servers, the same support teams. It's just,
right.
And they've actually figured out that oftentimes, like when someone cancels service, you know, they switch to.
It's one of their companies.
Yeah. And it's like, because they own like 8 out of the 10 on like the top 10 sites.
And you don't even know it.
Yeah. Yeah. They spent about $2 billion on acquisitions.
Wow. So Tim, I don't mean to jump around, sure. But did you ever go to college and dropped out to be with your friend or you never did? They're all self-made, self-taught.
No. Yeah. And so, you know, the company that I started then, you know, I was still...
You're still in Houston at this point, right?
At that point, yeah. Yeah. And I had started building out VoIPO, which VoIPO was a voice over IP phone service, or I guess it
right.
still is. I still own
yeah,
it today.
Yeah, everybody uses voice over IP now. Then it was like, you know, what are you talking about, right?
The iPhone didn't even exist.
Yeah, I mean, the you whole know, like, internet infrastructure was different, right?
Yeah, yeah. So really then there was only Vonage. That was really
Oh, Vonage did exist was. At that point?
Yeah, it was very early stage.
That was all DSL probably, right? It wasn't really...
Yeah, I mean, you know, like a lot of people like the broadband adoption.
Right.
You know, like,
we didn't have broadband in our homes. That was right. You might have had a T1 in your office, then maybe you could do it. Right. But it wasn't like you just get Fios in your office now and you jump on the internet. So what happened? Your partner, he thought that VoIP was a good idea, or did he say, listen, find a business and I'll fund it? And you found the idea. How did that come about?
That's a new concept at that point. He just wanted to invest in something, and we kind of collectively, you know, decided to go for VoIP. And you know, really, the main thing that appealed to me was that it still had that subscription revenue,
right?
But we could sell it to a much broader market because right. not everybody needed hosting, but pretty much everybody
needs phone.
You know, needs phone, and so. VoIPO today is 14 years old. I've since, you know, bought him out, you know, and so I own the company fully today. And
it's still
14
operates.
Years old.
Still going?
Yep. We have right around 100,000 customers or so, about 80% residential.
And is it a regional, like more like down in the Houston, Dallas areas or all over the country?
It's all over the country.
Okay.
And what basically once it had kind of gotten to a point where it was, you know, taking the majority of my time, you know, I kind of phased out of HostGator. It was more right. of like a strategic, you know, I helped with like M&A and things like
right,
that.
Like a consultant at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, whenever I did that, I also moved because I hated Houston. You know, it just wasn't for me.
Wasn't for you. Yeah.
You know, I hated the humidity, the weather.
Yeah, of course.
Moved to Southern California. So I'm in, I've been out here for about 10 years now. And,
like the San Diego area or?
Orange County.
Okay, great.
Irvine and
Newport. Any wildfires there or no? Not by you?
Not by us. It's scary sometimes because you can actually like kind of see them in the
really?
Horizon, but you know that it's still far enough away that I'm not like in a high risk zone.
Area, yeah. Wow.
Because part of the reason is that it's so built out, you know, so it's all concrete, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so I have that, and that business, you know, is still, like I said, still operating today. We're pivoting a little bit with it. The residential side is still going strong, you know, but we're focusing on business services more and more. And then that led to Profit Layer, really, just because, you know, having a business for that long, you do get a little bit bored, you know.
Yeah, sure. A lot of the day in and day out, you don't run necessarily.
Yeah,
you're working on the business more than in the business, right? So,
right.
And that's what you should be doing at this point.
Yeah, and so the consulting firm, you know, really, I just started working with businesses because. Due to, you know, all the experiences that, you know, that I had,
right.
You know, I was able to really go into a business and kind of help them, you know, figure out what their actual bottlenecks are, what problems they're having, because sometimes the problem's not what they think it is, and
right.
just help them grow. And so I work with, you know, everything from, you know, solo entrepreneurs. And then I also work some on the largest clients that I have are funds and investment funds and companies that I help do M&A. So I help match them with different, like match a company with investors or a fund and help them evaluate deals. And because sometimes
kinda like
with
private equity type of stuff.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you just have to, it's kind of, you have to be creative where it's like you have a company that's looking for something and you know that one fund would invest in it, except they don't like this one particular thing about it, but there's another fund that doesn't care about that. So if you connect the two together, say, hey, do you guys want to partner on this? You know, connect them,
right.
Take a placement fee. It's a nice little business.
Yeah.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
And so I do that. And, you know, as part of the consulting firm, you know, it's grown over time. I just really enjoy all the different industries that I get exposure to.
Sure.
Without having to build an entire business in it. And so we have a digital agency division that we kind of just had to add because of the demand for it. So, you know, within it, we've managed paid and digital advertising for really a pretty wide variety, but primarily companies that are already spending at least $10,000 a month online on marketing.
Right.
And they want to scale up profitably. And so our marketing arm, you know, that we have a lot of people that come in just for that because we take a holistic look at things and focus on the ROI. So instead of like the vanity metrics, like your lead cost is going down and your likes are going up and all that, we're just like, what's actually making money?
Right.
And we try to manage people's advertising budgets as kind of like an independent investment advisor versus someone tied to certain funds. We manage it with the view that we are trying to protect their investment and,
right.
you know, limit risk as much as possible, just as much as we are growing it. So how
do you develop that business in terms of prospecting? How do you generate business for that, for the consulting division, let's call it?
It's really been all referrals.
Yeah, they're just people referring, oh, you know, Tim's great.
The only thing that I really did was put out, like the very first consulting client that was a pretty decent sized deal, I literally had just posted on LinkedIn and just said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about taking on a couple consulting clients to start, you know, some new projects or something. Let me know if anyone's interested. And then a private equity fund messaged me that I had a past relationship with in terms of they had actually tried to buy part of HostGator once. And so I negotiated with them, but I hadn't talked to them in years. And,
right.
you know, and then they're just like, hey, do you want to help us do due diligence? And I'm like, cool, that sounds good. They'll pay it. And they offered a nice retainer, you know, just to wait. And they're like, you know, if we have a deal in the industry, you know, the web hosting industry or similar, then, you know, we'll, you know, have you help us just kind of feel things out. And so that was really the first one. And then
yeah.
from there, it just kind of a lot of referrals and networking.
Yeah. So that's what happened. You did work with them and then you got referred from someone else who they knew or someone you met along the way. And do you do a lot of stuff now to promote yourself from a content? I mean, obviously we're doing an interview here, but you know, in terms of social media, like what are you doing from a business development standpoint now? Does it kind of just come?
Yeah, it still kind of comes in. I'm looking for, I turn away more people than I work with now, because I want to be, confident that whenever I initially talk to them, I really want to establish that A, I can actually help them move forward, and
right.
B, they're the type of client that I want to work with, and there's just it's not going to be like a draining hassle kind of thing.
Right.
I still have like a pretty steady flow. This year, one of the things that I have started doing is, putting myself out there more, because I'm an introvert. A year ago, I didn't even really do podcasts or go live or anything. And then, I just started doing it to put myself out there more, and just started meeting more and more people that, it was just really good relationships. So now I do create some content and have a podcast, but I don't really advertise that much. It's really just networking, putting content out there that hopefully helps people and, inspires people.
Yeah. Thought leadership type of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that for people listening, that's important, right? As you grow your business, you really want to build what your ideal client profile is. Not even more so than your target market. Like you're the entrepreneur, so you should be able to choose who you do business with. Life's hard enough. You don't want to do business with people you don't like or aggravating or, asking. Even when I got started in law early on, it's always the client who has at least the smallest client always wants the most attention. They
right.
complain about their bills, and you want the clients that appreciate you and can pay the bills and want to use your services and can really benefit, and then you can give them the most benefit because it's a good fit. In your mind, it's something you understand. It's something you can kind of get your arms around. I'm sure there's industries you don't even want to deal with. You're like, I don't really know that industry, So, and maybe their personalities are just like not, what you're looking for. So I think a lot of business owners need to, kind of take that. Don't take that for granted that if you're going to be in business on your own, right, you should have that freedom of choice.
And I think one of the big things with that I would add to that is that, people oftentimes I think get caught up in thinking that, well, if I'm just, making a certain amount of revenue or a certain amount of income that, dealing with some of that, it's all okay. Like once I get past that revenue goal, everything's just magical. But the reality is though, like if you don't think about that, and sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do. But in general, if you don't factor that in and try to, figure out like who you actually want to work with.
Then right. Early on, like be strategic about it.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just pivot one day and say, I'm going to get rid of 300 of my clients. That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Cause like the worst thing is to like have a huge company with a lot of overhead and
right.
everything and realize that you hate it.
Yeah. I know a lot of people like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And some people that say, I gotta make money. I gotta take this, especially now with coronavirus and everything. They're just not I don't know if you ever read any of Mike Michalowicz's books. I've had him on my podcast, right? So he talks about entrepreneurial poverty. He meets all these entrepreneurs and they're poor. They're slaves to their business. I mean, you're not really an entrepreneur if you're just working for the company that you also own. That doesn't make you an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And they may have like high revenues, but it's like they just have so much overhead.
Right.
And
their profit margin is
tied to it.
What do they say? It's what you keep that matters, not what you make. Because
right.
at the end of the day, after taxes and all the other stuff, you may have nothing left. So what do you do? I think a lot of people now with coronavirus and everything are reevaluating. Like, maybe they owned a restaurant or a gym or some business, a retail store, and they were just getting by anyway. It was a lifestyle business. They weren't making tons of money. They didn't understand business concepts. And I think that they're like, well, do I want to do this again? Do I want to beef up my restaurant and get inventory and hire the staff back? And I was barely making money before. Maybe there's something else I can do. And I'm not saying all of them can. You know, you, it's interesting, Tim, because you are self-taught and you, I mean, you're really an entrepreneur. You're a guy who builds businesses, works businesses, creates value, maybe monetizes that value, recognizes that you want something that's recurring income and things like that. Some people just, you know, they get up in the morning, they're just putting out fires all day, but you just seem to have a knack for that because you were interested in it. You know, not everybody's like that. I mean, even people that go to college and graduate, they come out and they're lost. I think in some cases, college makes you more lost than before because you're just exposed to everything. You're like, oh, I could do anything. And then that's nothing. So I think it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if you give yourself enough credit, but I meet a lot of people and I interview a lot of people and, you know, most of them couldn't pivot. I mean, it just sounds to me like you could do this in almost any industry. I mean, if things changed in one industry, you'll go to another. You know how to build businesses.
And, you know, and that's really one of the things that over the years that, you know, that I've learned is that I stopped worrying so much and stopped, you know, because you're always going to have ups and downs and fires to put out and, you know, all this. But I've learned over time that, you know, I could deal with those. You know, and I don't, you know, I might have, I don't know what's coming,
right?
But if something comes up, I know that I'll be able to do something.
It'll always be something, right?
Yeah. And that's really when I stopped worrying. Cause sometimes people are just like, well, how do you, you know, like you have a phone company and if service goes down, then, you know, 911 and there's small stuff.
You can't sweat that. Right.
And it's like, you know, the way that I look at it now is just like, you know, I know that, you know, I'll always be able to figure it out. And, you know, even just like personally, it's just like once I got to the point where I really, truly felt that if I lost everything, all my businesses, you know, had no money, nothing,
right,
that I could, that I'm like, well, you know, it'll
climb back out, right?
Yeah, it might not be a fun time for a little while, but, you know, within, you know, 6 months to a year, I'm sure I'll be
right.
Have not so frightening.
You know, I think as human beings, like worrying is like the worst emotion we've ever created because it doesn't change the outcome, right? Actually, sometimes it makes it worse, but you're worrying about something that probably 9 times out of 10 doesn't happen, right? Your VoIP company didn't go down. That didn't happen. You know, there might be some glitches, you run into problems, you fix them, but not the whole world just collapses. You know, I mean, people can worry about the whole internet collapsing. I don't know, but we would figure it out just like we're all quarantined, figuring it out now. And the more resilient people get through it. I think that's one of the things. I don't know if you've ever, for any of your business, written a business plan, or I'm sure you've written strategic plans or put things down on paper. I mean, people who say they don't have business plans, they're not doing it in their head. So they have business plans. But I think that what people need to do going forward, and they haven't done this, is build resiliency into whatever their contingency plans are, their strategic plans, because of they're kind of waking up to the fact that you just got to be able to pivot. And some people did it very well. And some people did it very poorly because they're just, you know, like you said, it's never going to change. I always do it this way. Why would I do it differently in the world, especially in your industry, like the tech industry from when you started
to
now, it's like, it's like 100 years under other industries. It's great. And then this pandemic probably puts us 10 years forward in terms of technology and the use of technology. So yeah, I think it's all good advice. So what, tell me, you're obviously consulting with people, you're working with business owners, you're helping, mm-hmm. What kind of advice do you give and see problems that you help people solve, you know, that kind of thing to help the listeners kind of get a hold of whatever businesses that they're running?
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, obviously it varies a lot depending on what they're coming to me for, but one of the most common things is really just taking a like kind of a zoomed out outsider look at their business and what they think the problem is or what
they're
trying to
accomplish.
They don't
work. They don't look at it from an outside's perspective. They're too caught up in the.
Yeah, they may think that, you know, like one example is like they may think, you know, I need to grow. I need to amp up my marketing. And then, you know, whenever they come in, it's like we could do marketing for them. That's fine. But if we actually break it down and look at things with them, you know, and think about things like in a line,
right.
You know, and we're just like, okay, so you have people come in through your marketing here, you know, they, what is your sales process? And, you know, that could be, you know, like a salesperson or whatever. So then it's like, if the salesperson and the sales process has like a extremely low closing ratio, then
right,
adding more marketing is just going to increase volume that is going to still be wasted because it's bottlenecked.
Right.
You know,
so it's a process issue really.
Yeah. You know, and then, so they're like, okay, that makes sense. So it's figuring out where, you know, things need to be optimized, you know, and saying, let's do this first.
Right.
And, you know, even in very simplistic, you know, cases, like one of the most common things with people that, you know, we see this a lot with attorneys, we see it a lot with accountants, any kind of professionals like that, medical, you know, they may be advertising and doing things, but whenever, if someone were to just respond to their ad and call them, you know, and they talk to a receptionist, you know, and then the receptionist doesn't have
the skills,
the info,
right,
to answer their questions, to give them anything at all. Like,
no, they're just there to make an appointment. They think people are just going to call and make appointments. They don't do that.
And
nowadays,
so sometimes it's just a matter of like, you know, just equipping, you know, the person that, you know, they're going to be talking to,
right,
you know, with some basic information, you know, about like the scope of the services, you know, the, how your process usually works and all that. Because if they just call in and, you know, they're just like, okay, yeah, you know, we'll call you back, you know, take your info, then a lot of times people will just, they're going to call others and, you
probably,
know, keep going.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, so someone in that case may say, well, I don't have a salesperson, you know, I don't really have, you know, my business doesn't need that. But yeah. It's like, well, even if you don't have a sales person,
you need a
process.
There's
still a process.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So it could be a problem. So you don't have a lead generation problem. You don't have a volume problem. You have the problem of the people and the process. This is very common, obviously, right? People, process, and product. So if your process is broken, like you said, you don't even know. I mean, everybody thinks like more business will solve the problem. But like you said, it's funny with during pandemic, right? Cash, I always used to say, and I still do, cash flow hides a lot of things. Mm-hmm. We can be real sloppy with what we do because we just think everything's good because money keeps coming in the door and hiding the problems and eventually it blows up. But then when something like this happens and it comes to a screeching halt and all the smoke clears, you're like, I didn't realize there were four holes in the floor and everything was draining out as money came coming in. And
exactly,
it was an eye opener, but it sounds to me like you're really helping a lot of people. So are there any, you said you work with a lot of people in the investment space, like investors looking to invest in businesses. So you work with a lot of private equity groups or private investors?
Typically more the funds.
The funds, private equity funds.
I'm either working typically with, you know, the business owner or a large fund, not so much private investors.
And are you helping them with their process? Are you helping them source deals? You're helping them evaluate deals?
For the funds?
Yeah.
Typically, yeah. So I definitely do help them find deals.
Okay.
And then I also help some with the due diligence process or, you know, just, and then on the opposite side too, you know, sometimes it's working with the company to pull all of the information together that they need to be able to, you know, present to a, you know, a fund that's interested because,
right,
you know, there are certain metrics that, you know, some people are like, well, I didn't even realize that I should have been tracking this. You know, they know the basics, but, you know, they're kind of like, I haven't really tracked my churn or, you know, my acquisition costs. Or,
right. Yeah, all those key performance indicators. They don't even know what KPI means. I mean, if you get up to large corporations, obviously they're reporting, they're doing financial statements and all that kind of stuff. But small business owners, that's one of the problems I have when I deal with small business owners who are looking to sell either to a private equity group or to another owner, operator, or whatever it is, they have no records.
Yeah, they don't know their numbers.
They don't know their numbers. How do you prove that your dry cleaner is making a certain amount of money if most of it's cash and you don't have any records? You know,
right.
So good luck with that. I mean, you can't monetize value that doesn't exist unless it's your friend and he knows your business is going to pay you. Beyond that, you can't go to the marketplace. I find that's common, and business owners definitely overvalue what they have because they can't prove it. And, you know, they think cash flow is value, and it's unfortunately not. Like you said, you can have a $20 million business, but if it's generating $500,000 of profit, it's not worth as much as you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's got some potential. I mean, obviously there's buyers, right? That, like you said about this company that they sold HostGator to, they obviously had economies of scale and synergies, and they were looking to build a marketplace. So for them, they bring in a company and they have all the equipment already. They probably can lay off half the employees and they don't need the equipment. They're running the same stuff.
It works. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's pretty much what they did. You know, they looked at everything as, you know, we can move the servers to our own facilities. You know, we can consolidate, you know, the support teams and, you know, they, what's interesting though, is that, it hasn't worked out so well for them. You know, all the companies they bought, the service levels, in my opinion, dropped a lot. And they, you know, those companies were very profitable. You know, they bought many of them and now they're losing money because they're public. So they're losing money now when they bought over 30 profitable companies. But you know,
look, it's very common, right? You lose the personal touch. You lose touch with the customer service that you need to provide to people. And that's what was driving you to begin with. All that hosting stuff is all service, right? So people want to keep it up and running. They want to know. They want to call you. They want to be taken care of. And if they're not, they do have options. And over the years, they've had more options.
Yeah. And that's really one of the, you know, the big things too, you know, that we, with any business, you know, that we see is just having the human element and, empathy, you know, and just really, I mean, nothing's ever going to be perfect. Just, you know, your services are not going to be perfect. Things are going to be late sometimes, whatever.
But just admit to it. Be open.
Yeah, book, right? Be transparent and open. And, you know, people aren't generally expecting perfection. You know, they're just expecting good service. And good service, you know, is not perfection. It's just keeping them informed and, you know, just being transparent. Like if something's going to be delayed, let them know, you know. Yeah,
especially nowadays. I mean, you hear from companies all the time, right? Yeah. They say, listen, we're delayed because our supply chain is down and, you know, our company's in Wuhan and whatever. And, you know, as long as they expect, you're managing people's expectations.
Yeah, and, you know, and it even in some ways, you know, like I've seen a lot of companies during the pandemic that, you know, they've even worried about, like they get super worried about like, well, you know, I'm not going to be able to pay this vendor on time, you know, and it's going to be this catastrophic thing.
So tell
them. And then it turns out that whenever they do that, they're like, oh, that's fine. We'll work with you. We know everything's crazy right now.
Everybody's working with you. And they always, they usually do. I mean, people don't want to go. They don't look, if you don't work with them, the choice is you go out of business and they're chasing you for the money and it's just all kinds of aggravation. So most of the time, if you're open and honest with people and you say, listen, we have this problem. It's a short-term issue. Would you give us another 60 days? You know, usually they're in the position to do it or they have no choice. You got to wait. I mean, that's just the way that it works. It's just not worth it.
Versus collection and if you just ignore it, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, with anything, even, you know, even if it's the IRS, it's like, you know, if you just ignore their letters and
come and bite you, you back know, at some
eventually
point.
they'll get it. But if you call in, like, you know, talk to them, respond to them,
yeah,
you know, have your accountant do something,
of course,
then they're actually pretty flexible.
They are. Well, they have no interest. They're not sending you to jail. They certainly don't have interest in shutting you down because then whatever little money they took out of your bank account, they're not going to get anything else.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, everybody's all the IRS, they're all afraid of them. And you're right. If you work with them, just like anything, any other creditors, you know, like life doesn't stop. I've had clients like, oh my God, I owe $100,000 in taxes because I was sick last year. We made more money than I thought and I couldn't pay my bills and somebody left us and we lost this client. Okay, well, the IRS actually has uncollectible status for people that are really bad off, you know, and they don't collect because they determine they can't, there's nothing to collect. They're just not looking to do that. So, you know, I think that that's all interesting. But Tim, I want to thank you so much for, you know, participating in this thing today, for coming on the podcast.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.